You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Today is Thursday, so we're talking about coaching. Before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m., and all are brought to you live on octalkradio.net. Our call-in number, since we are talk radio, let me give those to you before I forget, 949-713-6443. Or if that line's busy, you can call in on 949-713-6447. Hey, I hope to hear from you. Just weigh in on your opinions, and let's keep the conversation going. Well, I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice. I'm a master certified coach, past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation, and my coaching training was done through CTI, the Coaches Training Institute, oh so many years ago. I've been coaching executives and business owners for 17 years here in Orange County, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective, which is a part of the Critical Mass for Business Service Group. Here at the Coaching Perspective, we offer individual and group coaching. On the individual side, we coach top executives to the newest entry-level position, and many times we're coaching people who want to just sharpen their business skills. Our group coaching involves either work units, departments, or project teams, and many times it's specifically requested when there has been a physical or organizational upheaval in the company. So that's what we do here on the Coaching Perspective. Well, let's see, what are we talking about today? You know, what I'd like to talk about is communication. You know, it's one of those things that we think we do well because we've been doing it so very long. We start talking, I don't know, I've forgotten so long now, my kids are older, 1 or 2 years old, and we never stop until that last day when we draw the last breath, and just because we do it all the time, we think we're pretty good at it. But you know what? It's one of those things that's like every other muscle in our body. It's there. But how well it functions, how well it supports our needs and our abilities, all depends on how we train and use and take care of that muscle. Communication is just another muscle, and it needs to be exercised, it needs to be used, and it needs tuning up. So, hey, let me give you a quick tip. You want to get a tune-up for your coaching skills? Best book I've ever read on the topic, The Communication Catalyst. It's written by Mickey Conley and Richard Reinoshek. And a few months ago, I had the opportunity to meet Mickey and talk to him about his book. Absolutely fascinating individual, in addition to being a great author. And we had a great afternoon together talking about communication and how we can all make it better. You know, one of the things that that Mickey hits on that I had never really ever thought about before is he talks about communication as a answer to the modern demand for more speed in our lives. Do you think he means we just talk faster? Nope, that's not what he means. He means, can we talk more effective? You know, and he makes the point that effective conversations can accelerate any collaborative achievement. And he goes on, you know, maybe one of the most interesting things, or let me say one of the most unusual things about his book, is it's a blend of fact and fiction. You know, not the sort of blend that you and I use when we're talking about our fishing tales, and it's hard to tell where fiction entered and fact left. But each chapter, when it ends, which is your, I don't want to say typical, but which is a textbook kind of discussion. Each chapter is then followed by a chapter in a fictional story that illustrates his points about better communication in a business setting. And, you know, it's just great. I love books that and Mickey's book is one of those that give you the tips at the end of the chapter, sort of like the cliff notes. You know, you flip to the chapter summary and go, do I really need to read the chapter? But, you know, besides giving you the chapter summary at the end by including this fictional story, you really get to sort of observe, if that's the right word when you're reading, you get to observe a live example of the communication lesson that he's just finished imparting to you in that particular chapter. So a great book to read, a definite must to have on your bookshelf and for business professionals. We had a great time this last weekend. My business partner, Rick Franzi, and I also create and facilitate executive CEO peer groups here in Orange County, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. And once a year, we offer our members the opportunity to get away for a weekend along with their spouses and significant others. Or their significant others. I don't want to start a problem there. To get away for a weekend and to talk about a topic that has application both in your business life and in your personal life. And this last weekend, we had the opportunity to take about 30 people to the Riverside Mission Inn here in California. What a great facility. I can't believe I've lived this long in California and had never been to the Mission Inn. What a wonderful place to go. But we went there and we spent the weekend working on the communication catalyst. And I'll tell you, it was phenomenal. It was a great blend of business discussion and personal discussion with the spouses there. There was no way we were just going to focus on how to make your business communication more effective. We also got involved in how to make your personal communication more effective. So it was really a great opportunity. A great opportunity for Rick and I. Maybe not on the same level as Mickey himself, but. To take Mickey's information and knowledge and impart it to people that we care about and really see where that can go and what they could do with it. Mickey uses a couple of examples in his book. One is sort of a speedometer and talks about a speedometer in terms of how effective your speaking is in the communication. And it's sort of like if you think of the old-fashioned speedometer, the analog, not the digital, that is sort of a half circle and the needle sweeps up from zero around to the whatever your car can do, 100, 120 or more. And the higher up the needle goes, the faster the speed, the more effective the communication. And this is the analogy that Mickey uses in the book. And he makes a really great observation that, you know, if you think of the drip line on a roof, you take a peaked roof, and if a drop of rain falls on the left side of the roof, then it runs down the left side. If it falls just a degree over from the eave or the peak of the roof onto the right side, then it falls down the right side. And Mickey makes this analogy with the speedometer that he uses as his measuring tool for speaking, and says, you know, 50 is the midpoint, but between 49 and 51, you have a significant difference in the effectiveness of your communication. If you're on the 49 side, the likelihood is that your communication is decreasing in its effectiveness, and he gives some great tools and examples of how to measure that, and sort of a downward spiral. And if you're on the 51 side, you're on the good side, and you start to accelerate. And again, he gives some wonderful examples of how to measure and how to observe and sort of be aware of what's going on there. But I wanted to share with you today my absolute favorite part of the book and what he's talking about, and that is his tips on listening. And understand, I'm just scratching the surface here. I'm just hoping to give you enough information that you're going to jump off of OCTalkRadio.net, and as soon as we're done with the Coaching Perspective show here, that you're going to jump onto Amazon.com and order Mickey's book. So I certainly can't substitute for what's in the book, and I wouldn't even want to try to do that. But I want to tell you about a few of the things in it, just so that it whets your appetite and gets you going to buy it. But the example or the analogy he uses with listening is not a speedometer, it's a ladder. And he talks about the fact that the higher we climb on the ladder, the more effective we are in listening, the more points that we get. And he makes the point that at the bottom of the ladder, we really get 0 points. And the reason for that is that, in his analogy, this is what he calls bioreaction. It's where we're into what he terms pretense and sincerity. And he says, you know, when you're listening at that level, your focus is all on your own personal preferences and the other person's transgressions. And that you tend to listen through the filter of a threat response, which occurs anytime you experience being dominated, diminished, or disrupted. Now, let me sort of emphasize what he's talking about there. What he's saying is that when you're listening at this lowest level, the bioreaction level, that you are totally focused on reaction. And you're totally focused on reaction in the sense that he goes on to give us a little lesson on how the brain works. And he talks about the fact that when we have a threat, information is sent to both the thalamus and the cortex, two different parts of your brain. The cortex is what I want to call the good part or the modern part of the brain, because that's where we do analytical thinking and where we're creative. So information that comes into the cortex is analyzed, evaluated, treated creatively, and then that response, once it's been correlated as, okay, I've received this threat, I've now analyzed it, it's like what happened last week, 2 years ago, whatever, and this is the way I should react to it, that information is then sent on to the amygdala, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, amygdala. That's really bothering somebody. You probably ought to call in and correct me right away because I'm going to just keep saying it that way. The alternative is if that same threat information is sent to another part of your brain, the thalamus. The thalamus only has the ability to make one of four decisions: fight, flee, faint, or appease. This is sort of the primitive man kind of reaction. I perceive a threat, I'm going to run away, I'm going to beat it to death, I'm going to faint, or I'm going to find some way to appease it so that it doesn't continue to threaten me. And, you know, the problem is that when the threat information is sent to these two parts of the brain, the thalamus and the cortex, they receive it at the same time, but the thalamus has a high-speed connection to the amygdala, and it immediately says, hey, run away, fight, faint, flee, whatever, while the cortex is still analyzing this information. So what happens to many of us, and I've heard the term used, is our brain, the thinking part of our brain, the cortex, gets hijacked by the thalamus. Before we can think about what the reaction should be, we've already reacted. And, you know, we've all been in these situations where you're sitting at your desk and you see something out of the corner of your eye and it's somebody swinging their arm and you immediately duck as if they were going to hit you. What's happened is that perceived threat information went to the thalamus and the thalamus said, swinging hand, duck before you get hit. And that's what you do. The cortex, meanwhile, goes, hey, that was my wife's hand and there's no way she's going to hit me. So I don't need to duck. She must have just been swatting a fly, swinging her arms, or talking. This is what happens at the bioreaction level. And you know what Conley says is, you know, the skill you need here is to catch and correct. You need to identify what your sort of typical reaction is to threats so that when they happen, you realize they've happened and you can immediately ask your brain a question that the thalamus can't answer so that you don't go into that fight or flight kind of situation. We had an opportunity this morning, and we were involved in a meeting, and we saw two people having a conversation. The one person felt kind of diminished or disrespected by what was going on. The other person, as the conversation went on, felt very threatened by what was going on. And the person who felt sort of diminished immediately reacted in an attack mode without ever thinking about what was really going on. Didn't have a chance. Here's a threat. I'm going to attack it. And, you know, we talked later. Some of us sitting around observed the same thing. We saw the same thing going on that this person who went into attack mode observed. But some of us react differently. You know, sort of my way of reaction, my immediate bioreaction to a threat is to sort of sit back and think about what's going on. It's to be passive. So it's rather than fighting or fleeing, I just sort of almost faint. I wait and see what's really going on. Should I take a second look? What's going to happen? Probably not a great reaction if there was a life or death threat, but probably a reaction that serves me well in a business environment. But we've all got different ways of reacting to it. So what Conley talks about is on the ladder of listening, where we kind of start out is this bioreaction, and you really want to get out of that. As you go up the ladder, and there are four steps up the ladder, the next step up is what he calls contentment. And this is where you're focusing on what's actually being said, and you have the ability to separate the words from what the speaker meant. You know, we think listening is such a passive activity, and it is really a contact sport. It's something that we have to get very involved in. And in coaching, we often refer to the term of active listening. And it sounds sort of like, well, what do you mean by active listening? And what people tend to do when somebody says you aren't listening well is that they really focus on the words that are being said. And when the other person's through talking, they go, I listen so well, I can repeat your side of the conversation verbatim. I can repeat every single word that you spoke. Content that we're looking for here is when you not only hear the words, but you know what was being meant. You know, so that the difference, and this is where emails get us into trouble, I read the words that you write on an email, and I know what the content is. You said, get out of here. And I'm going, why do I have to leave? Whereas if you were in front of me speaking, I know that you meant by the words, get out of here, which is how unbelievably amazing. Same words, different meaning. And so that's what we want to do when we move up the ladder into the content portion. I said content, but content portion. We want to focus on what is really being meant, not just what's being said. And the skill here that is pointed out is the test you want to do is as you listen to something, ask yourself, have you learned something new? Did you get new information, new ideas, or new insights? So it's not just a matter of being able to repeat what was being said, but what did you learn from what was going on in the conversation? Well, the next step up, the next rung up the ladder is compassion. And he talks about compassion as listening to appreciate the speaker's personal emotional relationship to what's being said without trying to change anything. You know, this is on a very simple level. It's allowing the other person to vent. And we all do this to some extent. We have a friend approach us or a close to relationship, and the person's upset about something, and we just sort of sit back and we let them go on and on about what they're upset about. This goes beyond that. The words he uses, we appreciate the person's emotional relationship to what they're saying, and we don't try to change them. So it's not just listening to repeat, but it's understanding the content. That was the first one. And it's being compassionate in that we appreciate why they're emotionally upset about this. And we allow them to vent safely and recover their poise. You know, how many of us at the end of this kind of venting, I see somebody, I want to tell you about a meeting I had this morning and I didn't go well and I just unload on you. when I'm all done, it's like, oh, I feel so much better about this. And I can now look at the facts with a different point of view in mind. He gives a couple of tips. One, don't interrupt when they're talking. And two, when they stop talking, ask them anything else, in which almost all cases they're going to go, well, you know, there was something else, and they'll give you some more information. And when they finally run out of steam, then you go, what do you think should happen now? This is true compassionate listening, and this takes you up to the second rung of the ladder. The third rung of the ladder is where what he refers to, what Conley refers to, as listening to appreciate the most important purpose at stake for the speaker. This is what he calls essential purpose. It is listening to understand what is it that the person speaking really wants to get out of this conversation. And you know what? The key here is that you don't volunteer any opinions about what's being discussed until you can really appreciate or think you know what the speaker's essential purpose is. And purpose is typically what someone is for, not what they're against. Concerns are what I'm against. Purpose is what I am for. And when you can talk to the person, when you can get involved in a conversation where the other person knows, can tell that you're aware of what their purpose is in this conversation, then you automatically start to create an environment of trust and respect. And that is really critical. Top rung of the ladder, according to Conley, is listening for mutual value. You know, this gets into another part of his book, which we're not going to get into today, but he talks about the fact that the real skill in really good active listening is finding the intersection. By intersection, he means the common ground that we can have this conversation about. Common ground means, you know, I go into a conversation and I'm listening to you express your view of the world, of the situation. I have my view of what I think the situation is. And there are all kinds of facts, relevant facts, that I have about what went on and relevant facts that you have about what went on. The real skill, the place where you know you're really performing great listening is when you find the intersection of my view, your view, and the relevant facts that we agree on. At this point, you can now start to have a really intelligent conversation because you have found a common ground. So just briefly, those are some of the key things in Conley's communication catalyst. When he talks about listening, he also talks about speaking. He gives you lots of other great tips, both in a very straightforward business way and also very entertaining in terms of the fictional story that he also weaves into his book. So, you know, what does that have to do with coaching? Well, you know, as a coach, our key role is to really listen to our clients, to listen to what they're saying, and then to, in our terminology, to mirror back to them what we've heard them say so that they can see how other people, so they can look at it from a different perspective, and they can see how other people are seeing what they're saying. To do this, you really have to be a great communicator. You have to be able to, one, understand what the other person's purpose is. What is their essential purpose? You have to be a compassionate listener. You have to give them space to vent the things that are concerning them. You have to understand really the content that's being talked about, not just the words that are being said, but the meaning behind those words. When you really understand all of that, when you've taken it in and you have understood the content, you've been compassionate and you're listening, you absolutely understand their essential purpose that they're talking about, and you have found that intersection where there is some common ground, then at that point, you are ready to practice your coaching skills in terms of mirroring back. Because what would be worse than to mirror back the client's conversation that you didn't understand? if you didn't understand their real purpose, if you didn't understand what was really upsetting them, if you couldn't understand where the intersections were in this conversation that they were relating, then you can start to mirror back. Then you can start to work with them to change their perspective, to show them other ways of looking at what went on, and then ultimately start to talk about how they might react and how they might deal with that. I haven't run into any coaches that are guilty of this, but I have run into some people who think they're coaching, who just because they let somebody else talk, they think that they're coaching them. Just because they wait until they're done talking to then volunteer their opinion about what should be done, they think that they're providing a coaching environment. None of that is really accurate. You know, coaching involves true active listening, of really being there in the space with the client, understanding emotionally and factually where they're coming from, and helping them to look and see that for themselves. So often, especially when we get into this situation where the thalamus, rather than the cortex, is dictating our reactions in the environment, where we are in a full fight, flee, faint, or appease mode, we are not really seeing the total situation. We are working in a dumbed-down state without the full advantages of the analytical and creative part of our brain that is located in the cortex. So, you know, what is our goal as a coach in terms of listening skills? Our goal is to get out of the thalamus, the dumbed-down, fight, flee, appease, faint, and to get into that creative, analytical part of the brain where we can look at, here's what went on, here's what was meant, and here is some of the alternatives. We get past the either-or kind of environmental, emotional handicap that you've either got to agree with me or you're against me, and we get into the and point of view. So this is what happened, and what else could happen, and what else would be another way of looking at it, and how else might you react to it, and how would they take it? The more ands you can weave into the conversation and get away from the either or, the better job you're doing as a coach, and the more likely you're going to have some success there. So we're fast approaching the commercial break here, but let me just say that at this point, that kind of gives you a quick look at a great book that's out there that you can use in your communication to sharpen your communication skills and to really improve your coaching. But before we go on, let's just take a break here for a commercial.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Great job by our producer there. You know, I was running down. My voice was going hoarse. I'm having a little allergy problem today, and I needed a quick drink of water. And so I said, let's go to the commercial break. And the producer's scrambling, going, hey, it's we got a minute and a half yet before we do the commercial. But, hey, way to go, Paul. You whipped that right in there, and hardly anybody would know if I hadn't pointed it out to him. So, you know, how are we doing on our coaching these days? I am having a great time here talking to many of the leading HR professionals here in Orange County and finding out what their key issues are and what's going on in their businesses and their lives. And, you know, many of us are facing similar situations with employees today who've just about had it up to here with this whole recession business and what they're having to go through. But you know, I just want to talk about an interesting perspective that I'm beginning to be aware of that is more prevalent than I had really thought. And that is this constant debate about training or coaching. You know, what is your reaction when something that you believe to be universally true and accepted turns out not to be that at all? And what I'm talking about here is in my recent discussions with HR professionals, it's become really clear to me that the distinction between training and coaching is only clear in the minds of coaches, that most other people aren't really clear. You know, in our coaching training, we're taught that in our coaching education, we're taught that training is as different from coaching as consulting is, as therapy is. And we kind of cling to the fact that what trainers do is they teach you something, and what coaches do is they help you discover it for yourself. You know, if I believe that was the only distinction there, I think I'd pick the easiest one, which would be, hey, don't make me discover it for myself. Just teach it to me. But, you know, that's really not the case. Training is appropriate when we really want to impart some specific knowledge to a person. You know, and we train today in a number of different ways. I mean, sometimes the training is personal. I'm going to train you how to do something because I know how to do it, and that really works pretty well. It falls apart completely when someone tries to train you that doesn't really understand what they're doing. How many times have you asked somebody for help with a computer program, and they go, oh, yeah, I use that program, and you go, well, can you show me how to merge these pages and change the paragraph formatting and change the tab bars? And they go, yeah, I think I know how to do that. And they proceed to try to tell you, but they go, well, you know, hold on a minute. I got to go back to my computer because I sort of do it without thinking about it. That kind of training doesn't really work. You know, sometimes we train people by giving them a book or a manual to read, and we expect them to learn it all by themselves. You know, and there are those people who their preferred learning method is really more visual. They want to read it or see an illustrated manual. What happens to me in that case is I usually finish reading the manual and I understand it perfectly until I sit down and try to apply it. And then it all falls apart. I find out I really didn't understand it perfectly. I got the concept, but I didn't get the details. And, you know, now with the internet out there, which, gosh, there's just nothing we do anymore that isn't impacted by the internet, but we now have the ability for really very creative interactive learning on the internet, which usually means that we can read or listen to instructions, and then we're asked to respond, and many times with a great program, as soon as you respond, you're either congratulated or corrected. And then you go on to the next point, or you're corrected in terms of not just right or wrong, but this is what the answer should have been. You know, all of these methods require at least one more step, and that's to follow up to ensure that the instructions have been followed and that real learning has really occurred. In the case of a live trainer, that's pretty easy. In the case of manuals or electronic tools, who does the follow-up? In the case of the internet example, okay, I was told I was wrong, but now what happens? You know, so in the real world, the issue becomes that if we don't do a good job of follow-up, if somebody doesn't correct us on our errors right now while we're making them, it's really not going to work. You know, I mean, look at the example of you misspell a word and you misspell it 100 times. You misspell it every single time that you use that word. Well, what you've done is you've just practiced your imperfection. You have now perfected the wrong way of spelling that word, and every time you use it, it's correct in terms of modeling what you did before, but wrong in terms of the way it should be. The only way you can correct that is if there's somebody that is taking you and following up on the training and helping you check and go through with it. Too many times in a business setting, the kind of correction we use is more punishment than reward. It's work on this, and then I'll check it, and then I'll give you back a redline copy of everything that you did wrong. It's possible to learn that way, but it sure isn't a whole lot of fun. I mean, just think of the way that you uh, you train your pets. I mean, everybody knows now that the more appropriate way to train an animal is through rewards. You give your dog treats when he does something right. You praise him. You pet him. You tell him he's a good dog. Way to go, Rover. Roll over again, you know? And that kind of reward training really instills the learning much quicker and in a much more pleasant way than every time you reach out and do it wrong, you get an electronic shock kind of thing. And that's what coaching is really all about. Coaching doesn't train in terms of imparting the original knowledge that's needed to learn something. But what coaching does is it provides the positive reinforcement to training. You know, I saw a great example of this online. I had to renew my driving license, and so I went on a number of sites to take their sort of mock tests made up of questions from the DMV. And in many of those, I would answer the question, and then at the end, it would give me, here's the 50 questions, and you should have picked A, B, C, or D. You know what? I could correct my test that way, but I didn't learn anything. I finally found a site that I thought was really great because what it did is it gave me a question, it gave me my choices, and when I answered it, if I gave the wrong answer, it immediately gave me a paragraph of information on that was the wrong answer, this is why it was the wrong answer, and this is the right answer. Here's the question again, or this here's a different question on the same item again. And I found that kind of learning that really reinforced what I should be doing was much more positive, much more proactive, and much easier to retain. You know, there was a study done at one of the universities in, I believe it was in British Columbia. And what they did is at the beginning of the year, they offered the professors two different ways in which they could take educational training classes. One was if you went to a seminar, you just went to the seminar, and then two or three weeks later, a month later, I forget what it was, I think it was a couple months later, you were given a test to determine how much you had retained or learned from what the seminar was all about. That was one group. The second group was sent to the same seminar, but they were assigned a coach who then met with them weekly to review what did you learn in the seminar last week and how have you applied that? And what are you thinking about using? How are you going to practice that next week? And then what might we talk about next week that enhances this learning that you picked up in the seminar? And guess what? What they found was the retention and the learning was absolutely cemented in with the coaching follow-up, whereas it really diminished rapidly over time with a non-coaching follow-up. You know, it was great to me today or this week. I mentioned earlier that we had had this go away weekend retreat on communication from the book The Communication Catalyst with 30 of our members and their spouses. And we spent Saturday or Friday and Saturday working on it. What was really fun was this week as I met with many of those same people in meetings on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I heard them say, you know, we left the seminar and Sunday on the way home or Sunday in a meeting, I caught myself doing this, or my wife corrected me on that, or my partner corrected me on that. And what we were seeing is that the more people talked about what they had learned and the more their learning was reinforced and corrected, the more they were coached to use what they had just learned, the more they enjoyed it, the more fun it became, and the greater the retention was. The people who came to this program alone without a partner with them and who left and went back into their normal routine, 3 or 4 days later when we met with them, did not have anywhere near the same retention as the people who had gone through it with a partner, because what really happened, it wasn't so much the partner was there, but by the partner being there, they ended up talking about it for a few days afterwards, and there was some coaching going on at some level that reinforced all of that learning. So again, what is it that we're looking for? When somebody says, oh, I don't use coaching, we have our own in-house trainers. As a coach, I'm not looking to be your trainer. What I'm looking to do is to coach you to put into use what you've just been trained on and to reinforce that application and that learning in a positive way so that you will take it to the next level and learn more. And that's the big distinction in my mind between the training and the coaching, showing what can be done with the information and where you might go with it. So again, it just amazes me the number of people out there that are still to this day, many years after coaching's been around as a recognized profession, are still confused or still tend to mix up the training along with the coaching. Again, I don't mean to imply that everybody does this, but I see it happening. Well, you know, this is a good time to just kind of remind you that our radio show is really an extension of our 17-year business practice, where we build CEO peer groups for executives here in Orange County, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. And Rick and I are currently leading multiple CEO peer groups. And we are also leading groups that are for what we call key executives, which is the non-final decision maker in the company. It's usually the people who report or the direct reports to the CEO or president. And we have found tremendous learning and application in companies where both the CEO belongs to one group and one or more of their direct reports belongs to a key executive group. And, you know, they're able to, after they've each been to their individual monthly meetings, go back to the office and start to share that sort of common learning that they got. Now, the groups are a little bit different in that typically in the CEO group where we're dealing with the business executives, maybe a little more experienced, we may cover a topic like the communication catalyst and spend 30 minutes or an hour on it. And when we're dealing with the direct report groups, the key executives, we may spend 2.5 hours on it because they may not have been exposed to that information before. So again, we just find that when both are involved in it, there's tremendous learning there. The other thing that really is a sort of a new aha moment for us that's happened just since the first of the year is as we've been talking to the HR professionals here in our community, we found that there is a real need, a real cry for peer groups for HR professionals. I was with a director of HR the other day who said, you know, you talk about the CEO peer groups that you run and how they're for CEOs with the idea that it's lonely at the top. Who do they report to? Who can they share their information with? Hey, it's even worse for us here in the HR profession because we can't even make really close friendships. We have to be very careful in our relationships at work because we always have information that we can't share with the rest of the employees. And in fact, that doesn't extend to just the employees. It extends to our peers, other department heads, and it may even extend to the people above us so that we're kind of separated from everybody. So where do we go to talk about our issues and discuss them? And so there has been a request for, and we are in the process of creating key executive groups for HR professionals only. The only restriction in the membership would be that they are in the HR field in a key management role and that their business is not competitive with any of the other HR professionals that are in their direct group. So that has been a great learning for us as we've talked to our HR professionals since the beginning of the year. If you want to learn more about peer groups and how they function, I would suggest that you check out Rick Franzi, my partner, my business partner's book called Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups. It's been called The Definitive Guide to the CEO Peer Group Experience. You can buy it on Amazon.com, just under author. Type in Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I, and you will get through the mail a great book explaining what peer groups are really all about and how to handle that. Talking about books, we've got a new Critical Mass book that will be available the end of this month. In fact, I believe Rick is at the printers today picking up the first proof copy. But this is a wonderful book that has been put together as a result of our radio interviews of CEOs. And it is the guiding principles that CEOs use to run their books. We've got 62 contributing authors, prominent CEOs here in Orange County that have all contributed articles to that question, what's my guiding principle? And that book will be available under the Critical Mass banner later this month. So I'll give you more information on that, let you know where you can find it. Don't go to Amazon yet. It's not available. So we'll be soon, and actually we're going to be releasing the first copies of that at our executive conference March 29th at the Center Club. Any of you interested in that, you should check out the information on it on our website. That's criticalmassforbusiness.com, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. Also, if you are interested in hearing any of the shows that you might have missed along the way, you can go to our website to look at the latest shows, both from the coaching perspective shows and also the CEO interviews. Or, hey, you're already here on listening to octalkradio.net. They post the most recent shows on their site also, so you can look them up and see them there. So, hey, this has been a great day. I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate you talking to us. I hope that you've enjoyed the show and that our discussion has provided you with new ideas and information, since we said that the key to good communication is listening for learning. So hopefully you've learned something here that is going to help you make better, more informed decisions. So this is Doug Gefeller thanking you on behalf of Critical Mass for Business and the Coaching Perspective. Thanks for tuning in today. Look forward to talking to you next Thursday.
You've been listening to The Coaching Perspective only on octalkradio.net.